So a story I worked on recently was a story on the Clean Water Act. And this is a set of laws in the United States that are intended to preserve the quality of our drinking water in the United States. The New York Times had done a big story, actually out of China, 2 years ago, about pollution in China. And this last year, we decided to look in our own backyard and see how these government regulations were being enforced, and in many cases, how they were being violated by various different industries. So if you think about this story, you have an assignment to photograph water pollution and violations of the Clean Water Act, and it's the kind of story that's much easier to write about. You can talk about all the different ways that these various industries are violating our rules, but to photograph it, it's sort of an invisible thing. There aren't usually big piles of disgusting-looking water that you can illustrate the story with. So it was one of these stories that you really had to think about how you can convey some of these ideas. And it's a story that I had to work very closely with a reporter on so that we are telling the same story, and that my photos help to tell his story, and that his story helps to inform my photographs. So this is a story I like, a photo I like to introduce the story with, because this is from West Virginia, and this is water that's running down a valley from a coal mine where they destroy the entire mountaintop and mine for coal. And so what's happening is, as they do this, all of the chemical compounds that are trapped in that coal, and once they strip the coal out, all the water that they use in this process seeps down into the well water, into the groundwater, and has polluted all the drinking water in the towns below. And so how do you take something that's as simple and natural every day as water and show that for people who live in this place, it's a scary thing? This is a very dangerous thing. So this is where I talk about the importance of understanding how to use your camera, how an exposure works, how the light works. You know, this is a daylight scene, so there's green trees here and grass. But if I underexpose and I think about how the light is and just pick up the reflection on the water, I can make a picture that is more metaphor than just information. So you come away with a mood, a tone, a feeling, and in addition to telling you the information about where this picture is, you get something else from it. And this is the little town where that water flows into. This little boy's father works at the coal mine, and his favorite gift from him is a coal truck that he keeps a little piece of coal in. And his water in this house is so polluted that if you turn on the faucet for more than 5 or 10 minutes, you can smell the house starting to fill up with these sulfuric gases. And this boy, who's only 8 or 9 years old, has 10 false teeth all through his mouth because of all the years of brushing his teeth with the water there. And the dentist scolded his mother and said, "You're not practicing good hygiene with your son." And he brushes his teeth 3 times a day, which is more than I used to do when I was a kid. And still his teeth are all falling out. Or rotting, actually. And his brother gets scabs on his face and on his body that the mother has to put ointment on. And this is from bathing in this water. And as you walk through the town, there are lots of people who are affected by this. This little boy has Asperger's syndrome and attention deficit disorder. And you see lots of problems like this. There are many people who would have their gallbladders removed, many brain tumors. It's difficult to tell the story in the newspaper because it's very hard to say that these medical conditions came directly from this pollution. But when you see so much of it and you see how polluted the water is, it's hard not to make this connection. So I had to spend a lot of time with these people, talking to them, asking them about what their lives are like. People are very kind to me that they let me into their homes and share their stories with me. It's something I talk about a lot when I talk about doing photography, that we rely on the gift of access from the people we photograph. And without that access, our jobs would be impossible. So this is what it looks like before they remove the mountaintop. They take every single tree off, and then they start to use dynamite to remove the hillside. And that's sort of what it looks like after. And so their mother can't let them stay in the bath too long, so they have a bath ritual that is, they get in, turn on the water, they get in as quickly as they can, and wash down. And even after, you know, 5 or 10 minutes of this, you can start to smell these fumes. And, you know, these kids, they love being in the bathtub. It's a lot of fun for them. And they hate to have to get out so quickly. And sometimes I would be photographing them, and the mom would get so sad that that she has to live like this. You know, in a country where you're supposed to have clean water, you're supposed to be able to drink your water and bathe in it and not worry about getting sick. So there were many different aspects to the story. One of them was the coal, the pollution from the coal mines. Another big one was on agriculture. So I spent a lot of time going to farms, mostly in Wisconsin, and seeing how agricultural runoff had affected the people's drinking water there. So this one farm, you can see these people's backyards are right up against the farm. They have the swimming pool right there. But they use the manure, the feces from the cows, from the cattle, and sometimes they even use the discarded flesh of the cattle from butcher shops to fertilize the land. And when they do this too much, because the farms are getting way too big to be supported by the amount of land that they have, when they do this too much, the nutrients cannot be absorbed by the soil and they start running into the groundwater. And that's what happened in this town, is that everyone's wells along this farmland here were poisoned. And these were some of the people whose wells had been poisoned. And then we came back to New York and we did a story about water pollution from sewer systems there. And in New York we have a very antiquated sewer system that when it rains a lot, the sewers overflow and they cannot all be treated. And so the extra raw sewage has to run into the rivers and lakes. And in this one place, it's called the Gowanus Canal, it's the most polluted urban waterway in the entire United States. And sometimes you take a boat on this canal, and this is what it looks like on the surface of the water. This hard film, a mixture of oil and petroleum, raw sewage. And we also looked at power plants in Ohio. Actually, this is in southern Pennsylvania. And the story on this one is how, and I only include one picture from this, but it was how regulations in the United States had been set up so that pollutants were coming out of the air emissions that the power plants were giving off. And in a way, instead of just being removed from the airborne pollution that had been transformed into the water, so these chemicals were being taken out of the air but put right back into the water. So another story we worked on was how European banks had made these proposals to give incentives to Brazilian farmers in the Amazon to stop cutting down their forests. Because deforestation had been happening at such an alarmingly rapid rate in Brazil that climate change had become a really pressing issue, and especially for people who lived in very fragile ecosystems. And this is one way we illustrated the story, by finding this small tribe called the Camayura in the southern Amazon basin, whose entire lives were being changed by the climate change that had happened from deforestation. So this is, in theory, a story about policy. You know, this is about practices that European banks wanted to implement to help stop deforestation. So as a photographer, you have to take a story about an idea, about a policy, and instead of going to a press conference and photographing somebody talking about this policy, the photographs you want to take are how this policy affects people. And it's always at the heart of what we do. So in my brief time there, I wanted to show what life was like and how it was affected and how it could potentially change from these policies. You see these massive soybean farms. All of this red, dry dirt used to be forest at one time, and now it's being cultivated for soybean production. And these are some of the farmers that work on these ranches and cattle farms. Cattle farming is also a big reason for deforestation in Brazil. I just liked this photo. This is on this river called the River of Death. And sometimes, you know, you're trying to think in visual metaphors. You're doing a story about deforestation. There are so many pictures that you can take of empty fields. You know, so I think about one single lonely tree standing on the horizon, and I think about how that can make you think about the story a little bit more. We spent a lot of times in this man John Carter's tiny little Cessna. We flew all over Brazil, and you got to see some of the fires that they used to burn to clear the fields for cultivation. And right when we arrived, it was this incredible scene. This Camayura village that I was telling you about is situated in the middle of the forest. It's a tiny little clearing, all surrounded by forest and by the river. And you can only land with a tiny little plane. And so when we touched down, it was the end of the day, and we got out of the plane, and as soon as we landed, we heard a gunshot. And so everybody's a little scared, so we're wondering what's going on. And we see all these children running off into the distance, and they had shot this parrot. It's a macaw, I believe. And immediately, I mean, we'd only been there for 5 minutes. Immediately, we got to see how this climate change had affected them. They told us that in the past, they would never shoot this bird. This bird is important for them because they like to use the feathers to make their jewelry and you know, other kinds of decorations. But this bird they were going to eat because so many of the fish that they usually rely on for protein in their diet were gone because the lakes were now too low, the water was now too warm, and to find the kind of fish that they needed to survive on, they would often have to travel for 2 days at a time. So now they found themselves eating parrots, these birds. Many times the mothers would tell me they have to feed their children ants, little insects. And they eat ants with bread because they can't eat the fish. And it's the fish that they love, and it's an important part of their diet. But for us, we were the guests of honor, and they did have this fish for us. And they told us that they had hunted for 2 days to try to get this fish. And you know, we were so honored to come in and be their guests. And they gave us their most valuable food, and they allowed us to eat with them. And it was amazing to see the stark differences between this very old way of life, the kind of the way of life that they've been living for you know, for much of their existence, and to see the juxtaposition, the comparison with some of this modern, these modern gifts that people had brought them. So they had a satellite dish, they had a couple of computers that were covered with dust that they never used. There's no electricity in this town, so I'm not really sure how the dish is used, but I think maybe it was for communication, for emergencies. But still, just an amazing scene to see this naked woman and a satellite dish. And this is in the very early morning light, as the sun is rising. Everyone bathes in the lake, and so the girls dry off by the fire after bathing. And one of the most incredible scenes I can remember as a photographer, being invited to sit around the hut where all the village elders convene, and they talk about all the affairs of the village. And we were invited as their guests, and we got to sit in front of this hut, and they told us all about how climate change had affected their village. And there were incredible stories. There's no light in this village. We were all sitting around this tiny little fire, and you could see the stars like I had never seen them before. Just beautiful. And at some point, they stopped telling stories, and they started just singing. They said, "The stories, it's enough. We want to sing." And they began chanting this amazing, amazing song. And this is a 30-second exposure, so I just set my camera down on the bench and I hit the shutter, and it's going for a long time. It's why the guy is a little blurred. And I recorded the audio, and we used this online for a multimedia presentation. So it really captured what it was like to be there. And it's something that's actually wonderful about the changing media now. Something like this, we could never convey that feeling in the newspaper. We only, for this story, ran a couple of tiny photos. I think maybe four photos made it into the newspaper. But we got to do this great online presentation with audio. You got to hear these people sing. It's very exciting for a photographer. It's an exciting time. Another great story I got to work on a while ago was a ballet festival in Cuba. And I'm showing you all these different stories just as an example of how varied the experiences are as a photographer, and that you don't specialize in one particular thing. You know, often a reporter, they have their beat. You know, a reporter is going to cover sports all the time, or they're going to cover politics. But the beautiful thing about being a photographer is you get to do all kinds of things, and it's really wonderful. It keeps the job interesting, and it allows you so many different kinds of experiences. So I'll go through this one pretty quickly. It's pretty self-explanatory. Also, I had never photographed ballet before. And, I mean, the great thing about being a photojournalist, you know, I went there and there are a lot of people who very specifically only photograph ballet, and that's what they do. So they have an idea that a perfect ballet picture is one kind of picture where, you know, it's at the peak moment, it's the entire body, at the height of the jump, but I don't know all these things. You know, I don't specialize in dance photography, so I bring all of my own personal ideas about photography, about journalism, about how to cover something, to a very specialized kind of photography. And I think the photos I ended up making on this were very different than what a ballet photographer would have captured.